Hello, and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Szczepańczyk. On today's show, we'll feature an interview with Rosalinda Borsila, a professor and activist, to discuss the case of Afghani refugees seeking asylum in Norway. But now, a selection of news about media and democracy, entitled Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
In 2000, Congress authorized the FCC to issue low-power FM radio licenses to community groups and nonprofits. LPFM stations broadcast at 10 to 100 watts of power, covering about 3 to 5 miles. But when big media lobbyists complained that the tiny stations interfered with their full-power signals, Congress limited LPFM to rural areas. Thousands of applicants were prevented from getting licenses to bring community radio to their region. But a taxpayer-funded study found that big broadcasters' claims of interference were vastly overstated. And now bipartisan support is growing for bills in the House and Senate that would allow LPFM stations to go on the air in cities and suburbs across the country. Hannah Sassaman of the Prometheus Radio Project explains.
When Congress passed that law, they also asked the FCC to study whether or not low-power FM radio would truly interfere with full-power FM broadcasts in a big city like Philadelphia or D.C. or Boston. The FCC came back with an independent $2.2 million study which proved, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that there was plenty of room for real community radio. In Omaha, Nebraska, groups like the 100 Black Men of Omaha and people affiliated with the local YMCA wanted community radio to train kids on essential job skills and sharing their voices with people across the city. They joined together with Methodist church activists, local Chamber of Commerce officials, and thousands of community members to convince Lee Perry, the Republican from Omaha, to join with a great advocate of media reform, Mike Doyle, the Democrat from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to introduce the Local Community Radio Act of 2007.
Low-power FM stations play a vital role in the community because they are so focused on local issues. People listen to it, and it can save lives. For instance, when Hurricane Katrina slammed into Mississippi, one of the handful of stations that continued to operate was WQRZ-LP.
The volunteers working at that station climbed their 130-foot tower to move their antenna and transmitter location to higher ground, and they kept on the air during the storm, and for the first 48 hours after the storm went through, they were the only link between all of Hancock County and the outside world.
This summer, LPFM activists will be visiting their representatives in their home states to urge them to support the Local Community Radio Act. Joe Torres, Government Relations Manager of Free Press.
We're doing in-district meetings with key members of the House Commerce Committee, which oversees telecom policy. We are asking constituents in the districts of about 20 representatives to actually take part in district meetings where they actually go and visit the congressperson, you know, asking them for their support for LPFM.
For more information, go to prometheusradio.org.
In New York City, the Mayor's Office of Film, Theater, and Broadcasting is redrafting a regulation that would have required photographers and filmmakers to get a permit and $1 million in liability insurance to shoot film and video in the city. The rules would have applied to any two people filming at a single site on public property for more than 30 minutes, or a crew of five or more people with a tripod filming on a site for more than 10 minutes. The onerous requirements would limit independent journalists and photographers, artists, tourists, and anyone interested in taking pictures in the most photographed city in the world. The mayor's proposed plan sparked a public outcry with an online petition that gathered more than 20,000 signatures, a First Amendment rally attended by 450 people, and even a rap video. The New York Civil Liberties Union threatened to file a lawsuit. Donna Lieberman, executive director of the NYCLU, said, "As with street demonstrations, people who are exercising their right to be on the sidewalk without interfering with pedestrian traffic should not be required under any circumstances to get government approval to take pictures." Catherine Oliver, the commissioner of the film office, said the rules will be revised based on the feedback the office has received, and a 30-day comment period will be opened after the new rules are published.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit www.freepress.net.
The Federal Communications Commission is rewriting America's media ownership rules and could allow fewer companies to own more media outlets and make the media worse, with more commercialism, less localism, less quality journalism, less independent music, and fewer diverse perspectives. The FCC will hold an official hearing on the issue in Chicago on Thursday, September 20th, 2007, and you are encouraged to attend and sign up and testify. Learn more. Visit stopbigmedia.com and chicagomediaaction.org. Thanks. You're listening to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepinchik. We now feature an interview with Rosalinda Borsila, a professor and activist, to discuss the case of Afghani refugees seeking asylum in Norway. The following interview was recorded on Wednesday, August 7th, 2007. We are joined on the phone by Rosalinda Borsila, who is an associate professor of art at the University of South Florida, who is calling to us from Chicago, but was also working in a very interesting case of foreign policy matters and human rights involving a case of refugees in Afghanistan who are trying to seek asylum in Norway and the struggles they've encountered there. Rosalinda Borsila, thank you very much and welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Mitchell.
Well, let's begin with, I suppose we might begin with 9/11. United States is attacked. Afghanistan is blamed. The United States launches a war. Afghanis are forced to seek asylum because their country is basically getting destroyed. And some 2,000 refugees are trying to arrive in Norway, socially progressive country which has a history of granting asylum to refugees who are under dire circumstances like that happening in Afghanistan. Take us from there. What happens from there?
Well, as you know, there were hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Afghani refugees seeking refuge anywhere in the world that they can. And these 2,000 Afghanis that arrived in Norway were really the fortunate ones arriving in a country that not only was a signatory of the refugee conventions adopted by the UN, but also has a long tradition of welcoming refugees. The situation for them, as they arrived and they've endured very difficult travels to get to where they are, their situation became dramatically worse when, in the fall of 2005, the government of Norway, the United Nations High Commission on Refugees, and the government of Afghanistan entered into a three-party agreement. And this agreement stated, in essence, two things. The first was that that Afghanis who have been granted refugee status already in Norway would be offered the chance to return voluntarily, and that they would be assisted to do this. They would be given 5,000 Norwegian kroner, which is approximately $795, to return. Less than 10 refugees took this offer. But that all the others that have not been processed at this time were considered really to be refugees who didn't have much of a case. In other words, that they didn't present a humanitarian emergency, that the situation in Afghanistan had is secure enough for them to be returned as well by force if necessary. So what we have essentially is this group of 2,000 refugees is given a deadline of May 26, 2006, by which they can either return voluntarily or they will be returned by force by direct flight.
A lot of people may consider if they're leaving Afghanistan in the wake of the war back in 2001, a lot of Americans might think, well, we won that war and things are better now, right? So why don't the Afghani refugees just return back to Afghanistan? What's going on in Afghanistan?
Right. I think that's the official media story. And the one that we're most likely to hear is that there have been democratic elections in Afghanistan. There's a legitimate government and everything seems to be looking better. And that the invasion, in a sense, you know, the operation was successful. However, there are many sources that report what essentially what the refugees themselves are saying. Many sources, such as Human Rights Watch, even the United Nations High Commission for Refugees itself, are reporting that the humanitarian situation in Afghanistan is actually getting worse in the last 12 months and not better. There's an intensification of violence, partially due to the insurgent efforts by the Taliban, partially due to the abuses of the government itself, partially due really to the U.S. And NATO military operations there, a lot of which rely on airstrikes. So there have been 340 airstrikes in June of 2006, for instance, according to the U.S. Central Command. This is more than double what's the amount of airstrikes that the U.S. military is carrying out in Iraq. And many of these airstrikes result in civilian casualties and civilian deaths. It's not a very clean sort of sanitary war, and it's certainly not contained in one region. Some official reports have said in the past, have tried to insist, that it's only some of the southern regions that are dangerous. Everywhere else is perfectly safe for people to return. But I think there's enough evidence to point towards actually the picture being much, much more troubling.
When you had mentioned airstrikes in Afghanistan, are you talking about the United States military carrying out airstrikes? Who are we talking about as far as deploying the airstrikes?
NATO. Officially, these are NATO airstrikes, but the reports are coming from the U.S. CENTCOM website and the U.S. CENTCOM reports. So I think that it's you know, the U.S. military is commanding the NATO effort, but it's not the only country that has military presence in Afghanistan. And NATO troops in Afghanistan are heavily, heavily reliant on air power to secure regions that they feel are unstable because of insurgent activity.
Let's return back to Norway for a moment. So Afghani refugees are basically facing a deadline in May 2006 to basically take our offer or be forced back. How did the Afghani refugees, probably some 2,000 of whom, respond back? Did they do anything?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, less than 10 refugees took the offer. Most people went into hiding. I tried to just keep a very low profile and live illegally in Norway, being terrified of being sent back. But a small group decided, sort of self-organized, and decided to protest this policy and to bring attention to Norwegian society and really to the world of the kinds of implications of these policies. When countries forcibly sent back Afghani refugees by claiming officially that the situation in Afghanistan is fine, what kinds of terrible consequences that actually has. So 600 to 800 refugees marched in protest in May 2006. 23 of them held a hunger strike until June 21st. And by the end, there were 60 people that had joined this hunger strike. And the hunger strike ended with a deal struck between the refugees and the Norwegian government, represented by the Minister of Labor and Social Inclusion. And that was to review these cases again. In other words, the official policy was to just mass reject all the cases for asylum based on the official story that the situation in Afghanistan was safe. But the victory the refugees won at that time was a further investigation into the security situation in Afghanistan and a further review of their case, of their request for asylum. And that was the promise they received at the time.
And that was last year. What has happened since?
Last year,
2006. How about in 2007? Have there been further actions by the Afghani refugees or by the government in this tug of war?
Yes, there has been further action because, unfortunately, there hasn't been much progress made in improving their situation or in stopping the deportations. Unfortunately, the deportations have continued. A lot of them happen in the middle of the night, or one or two people are snatched at a time. And so, again, the refugees had to try to create some kind of very public campaign to unmask this. And, again, they've even though this places them at tremendous risk because they're sort of coming out in the open as refugees who are targets for deportation, they came together again, a small group, that decided to do a kind of a pilgrimage. So they did a 650-kilometer march, which they called the Asylum March. And it follows a route that is very important in Norwegian national history. It's a 1,000-year-old pilgrimage that traditionally runs from Oslo to Trondheim, which is the burial site of Olaf the Holy, the founder of Christianity in Norway. And pilgrims, Norwegian pilgrims and Christian pilgrims, take this route to seek penance, usually. This group of Afghanis did this pilgrimage route in the opposite direction, going from Trondheim to Norway to seek not penance, but to seek justice. And they began the march on May 19th, 2007, and they ended on June 16th, 2007, in Oslo.
What has happened since then?
Well, they continued the protest. When they arrived in Oslo, they got a lot of sympathy along the way on their march from small town farmers, school groups, and church groups, and even from some very important political figures and on the left, especially, and some important church leaders. For instance, the bishop has been very supportive of their cause. However, they have been arrested. 20 of them have been detained and deported since. And it's very difficult to find out where they are, if they're still alive, if they're trying to leave the country again. So this other effort to bring this situation into the open and to force some kind of public debate has once again led to refugees being deported.
Let's talk about Norwegian policy regarding these Afghani refugees. Norway, as we had mentioned, there's a lot of people may consider, and maybe this is true, maybe it's not, but in worldwide has a reputation, as do many of the other Scandinavian countries, as being socially progressive. They would provide health care for all their citizens. They would provide generous benefits for people who work, so they would have ample time, and have a foreign policy that's probably certainly a lot better than other countries we might name. But nonetheless, they're reacting like this and fiercely resisting, including these Afghani refugees who have a very legitimate claim, a lot of people may argue, toward asking for asylum. Why has the Norwegian government been behaving like this with respect to resisting the legitimate claims of these Afghani refugees?
I think that those are the important questions to ask. It's not only what is happening very urgently right now with these refugees and what is their situation, but also what is the larger political picture that is producing situations like this within Norway and internationally. Norway is not by any means somehow the only country that is doing this. There's an international climate of acceptance of the idea or of consent to the idea that the situation in Afghanistan is resolved, that the invasion of Afghanistan has been a successful operation, and that somehow the international community is demonstrating this by repatriating Afghans against their will. So it seems like there are a number of things at stake. First of all, there's the public image of the U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan, which is justifying its legitimacy and justifying its victory by creating the illusion in the public that everything is fine, that the situation is stable, and that Afghanistan is now a democratic country which can offer its citizens a livable situation. And let's remember that according to the UN Refugee Convention, no state is allowed to expel or return a refugee in any manner whatsoever to the frontiers of territories where his or her life or freedom would be threatened. And I'm quoting directly from this convention that has been adopted. So what is at stake here, I think, is the larger image in the public perception internationally of what is happening in Afghanistan, painting the picture of a country where there are human rights, there is stability, and so forth, firstly. Secondly, I think it also has to do with a certain portrayal that the Norwegian political spectrum is struggling. Party, the Socialist Left Party, and the Center Party, which is the governing coalition. So it really sounds like a progressive left coalition, and I think in many ways it is. However, the Center Party has until now been in coalition with conservatives and other center parties, and it's not so hard to notice a swing towards the right and a swing towards more conservative policies across Europe, really. And I think what we're seeing is that even in a government where a coalition that includes a socialist left party, there can be this kind of dramatic kind of draconian policies to exclude support for refugees. And this should be this should concern everyone. I don't think this is only about Afghani refugees. I think it should concern all of us.
Let me ask about U.S. foreign policy with connection to this. Admittedly, we have touched a little bit about the U.S. Foreign policy involvement since it was the U.S.-launched war against Afghanistan, and I'm hesitating to use the word war because it was so one-sided, but nonetheless, we'll call it a war, against Afghanistan, which basically precipitated the situation that we've been discussing. Clearly, we can see U.S. involvement in that aspect. But do you see or do you know of any dimensions that U.S. policy may have with regards to Norway? Are there any connections there? And in what other ways is the U.S. government culpable in the situation here?
Right. Well, I think there are many ways. The wars, Afghanistan has known wars for decades. It didn't just start with 2001. We have to remember that Afghanistan was one of those territories where the Cold War was fought, where U.S.-backed wars were intended, planned and intended specifically to bleed military and economic resources from the Soviet Union. So when we're speaking about Afghanis now who are seeking refuge across the world, they've known nothing but war their entire lives. And again, the situation for them did not start with the invasion in 2001. That's what escalated it for everyone. So the U.S. definitely has a long history of involvement in destabilizing the region, in planting the seeds of war, and supporting, structurally supporting warfare on this territory. Now, of course, the U.S. is leading the NATO force that is supposed to provide some kind of post-regime change or post-occupation transition that seems to be failing dreadfully. And the effort, the international effort to help refugees is spearheaded or is under the auspices of the UN High Committee for Refugees. And arguably, the UN has been ineffective for years, and the UN has been strangleholded and dominated by the U.S. Its interests for a long time. I think it's easy for us to see that the institution is falling short of its stated goals and has. There are, again, millions of refugees from Afghanistan alone and from that conflict alone in the world today, not to mention we still have a refugee crisis after the wars in former Yugoslavia and, of course, Iraq. Clearly, I think one can see the longer and more or less invisible arm of U.S. interests in all of these aspects.
Let me ask a more personal question. This is an issue regarding Afghanistan and Norway with some ties, certainly, to the United States. How did you get interested in this? Are you Norwegian or Afghani?
No, I'm neither Norwegian nor Afghani. As a person who lives in the United States, I'm very concerned with the consequences of the imperial politics of this country and its government. And I think that all these wars that are taking place in somebody else's homes are directly relevant to all of us and are actually our responsibility to confront. So in general, I've been interested in refugee matters for a while. I'm an artist and I've done a lot of artwork related to power and to displacement and to the ways in which, you know, sort of the militarization of the powerful Western nations, especially the U.S., are impacting and reshaping the world. This particular case has been an entry point for me now, especially because of a friend I have who is a who is an activist in Norway and has been working very closely with this group of Afghanis, supporting them in solidarity with them. They are a very strong self-organized group with a very clear political vision of their own, but they do have a lot of other local groups that work in solidarity with them. So through my personal relationship with my friend, I found out about their protest, and I was very impressed by the clarity of their vision. I've been reading the statements they're writing, and I've been looking at the way that they handle the aesthetics and the poetics of protest as well, the way that they think about the choreography of what a protest is and how to appeal, not just to give out information, but to appeal to the conscience and the sort of emotional substratum of Norwegians who they're trying to win over to their cause. So being impressed with them and having a correspondence with my Norwegian friend, I've decided to try and stay involved in a small way from afar.
Let me ask, for listeners who may want to find out more about the situation, not only in the past, but also as it continues to unfold, where would you encourage people to find out more? Are there any resources you can point to in specific?
I think my challenge right now is to try to create those kinds of resources in English. There's a lot of information online in Norwegian. We're now trying to pull together as much as we can in English, and we will post this on the Indie Media site.
You're referring to the Independent Media Center website?
Yes.
Okay.
The Independent Media Center website, yes, thank you. And together with links to some of the reports about the situation in Afghanistan, where people can find more information about that. Also links to the two organizations in Norway that are working with the refugees. And I know they're working to try to organize an International Day of Solidarity and protest to raise awareness about the situation in Afghanistan and the forceful deportations of Afghanis back. And whenever we will have a complete summary of how that will be organized, that will be posted on that website, but also through the Delete the Border Network, which I think is a great network for people to be aware of. It's deletetheborder.org. It's the North American sort of global network of movements against borders.
Are there any other suggestions of what you encourage listeners to do to further the case of these Afghani refugees?
Well, we've been running a somewhat of a small campaign here from Chicago, but I hear that there are also some friends in Canada that have picked this campaign up recently. And that is, we've written a letter to the representatives of the Norwegian government abroad, to the different embassies and consulates, and circulated a petition with three very, very simple demands: to stop the deportations right away, to look into the situation and well-being of the people who have already been deported, and to review these official policies that would forcefully deport people. And we can also post that letter and that petition, and if people want to print it out or make their own letter, we will have a contact info for the Norwegian embassy in the United States. Again, we've already sent some faxes over and done a small kind of a faxing in campaign 2 weeks ago. I think we could continue with that as a small start. I sent an email out very generally to a number of listservs, and a small group in Canada just decided to get together and go and do a small protest of 40 people in front of the Norwegian embassy. And that's been received really well by the refugees. They've written back and said that it brought a great smile to their faces to know that small or large protests, small or large gestures of solidarity with them are very, very important and very meaningful.
We've been speaking with Rosalinda Bortilla, who is Bortilla?
Bortilla, yes.
Bortilla, who is an associate professor of art at the University of South Florida, who's been working on the case of Afghani refugees who've been trying to seek asylum in Norway and the struggle as a result of that. She's been calling us from Chicago, and we thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
That was an interview with Rosalinda Bortilla, recorded on August 7th, 2007. That concludes this episode of The Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.